Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by Forever Family Foundation. On the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name. The echo is haunting. The echo is always the same. I call your name. The echo is haunting. An echo can never be changed. So I call your name.
And welcome to the gathering on Signs of Life Radio. Thanks for joining us this evening. I'm Bob Ginsberg, and I am joined by the one and only, and the two and only, Tom Gould and Melissa Gould, and our new guest host, Marta Kristen Kane.
Yay! Whatever you want to call me is fine. Well.
She had to add the word.
Well, she knows it.
All too well. The show, as you, our listeners, should know by now, is devoted to questions that our listeners have. And some of you take the time to email us in advance of the show. And we also encourage you to call in with any questions, or you want to share something or have an experience. And if you'd like to join in, and please do, the number here is 888-627-6008. Tom was very good in holding up that sign. You know, I just finished my cataract surgery, and I could see great from a distance. But if I try to read anything, I got these big clunky readers that I have to put on. You know? But it's a trade-off, right? So, yeah, by all means, give us a call, 888-627-6008. We'd love to hear from you. We don't really have all the answers, but we try, right? We try. So let's start. We have somebody that wrote in, I'm listening to Laura Lynn Jackson's book, The Light Between Us. Laura mentions how we all have the ability to reach out and connect to our loved ones that have crossed. I so desperately want to feel a connection with my daughter that passed almost a year ago. I've had some wonderful signs, but on a day-to-day basis, I just feel lost and the ache of missing her. What can grieving parents do to keep some relationship and connection with our children? Kind of a universal question that we get all the time, and not only with children, but with parents and spouses. And I don't know if we have anything new to add to that, but I'll let you guys give it a shot.
Well, it's such a sad situation, and so many people are experiencing this, and I often make suggestions to find, you know, there's a talk about finding meaning after, as you're working your way through the grieving process. And sometimes setting up something special, whether it be a, you know, small little sanctuary within your home or something to do with your child's or your lost loved one's special belongings, or carrying on some sort of tradition, but spreading it to others too. So, you know, perhaps it's a garden or something out of doors or indoors or whatever you recall that your loved one most enjoyed, or the setting that they enjoyed, and making that your special spot to sort of communicate with your loved one, and making it a habit, and just say, I'll see you in the garden, or, you know, meet me over a cup of tea. And even though it's not the sign, as Laura suggests, that you come up with, well, actually, it could be. It could evolve into that. And just sort of making it a special ritual between you and your loved one. I know I have that in my home, in our living room, photographs of all our parents on our desk. And I I can't tell you how many times a day I'm greeting them, nodding to them, talking to them. So, you know, it's just something to always stay connected. And have you any suggestions, Tom?
No, I think you covered it up pretty well. It's the keeping them in your thoughts, even, you know, saying their name, talking to them. I think it's an excellent suggestion, building a garden or something in their honor. I know we've seen many readings where one of the first things a spirit will say when they come back through a medium to their loved ones is, I saw that memorial you made and I really loved it. So it gets through to them.
Yeah, and of course, she mentions that she's had some wonderful signs from her daughter, and that's terrific. But it's a struggle on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, sometimes we get a wonderful sign and we just
want more.
You know, and it doesn't quite work that way. Mm-hmm. You know, we can get it every day. So it's going to be, you know, the trick is to make that struggle lessen as time goes on. And we've often talked about that it must be somewhat difficult and take a lot of energy on the part of our loved ones in spirit to get through to us. So expecting them to sustain it on a daily basis might be unrealistic. But I think you gave some good suggestions there of making it a ritual. I mean, did you ever do any rituals?
Well, actually, after my mother died, my best friend did the most beautiful portrait of her from my photograph that I had taken. And it was actually more real than the photograph. I mean, it was so exquisite and with light coming through her eyes. And I would put, and I had it in a place where every time I walked by, I saw that beautiful painting. And it wasn't that big, but I would stop and I would, especially when I was in such extreme despair, I would stop and I would talk to her and I would ask for her help. And I would say, you know, just come to me and let's just talk. And it was very comforting to have that painting. And Melissa, you're right about that. It just to have that there and to talk and to express and to feel your emotions, and not sit on them all the time. You know, that was wonderful.
Another question. I'm wondering what our loved ones do as spirits in the spirit world. How do they spend their time? Are they teaching, learning, helping, guiding? And the second part of the question is, what do you think of angel numbers? I see the same numbers all the time. Is there a significance to seeing them? So, I mean, the first part of the question is another one of those that people want to know, you know, what are our loved ones doing? And we can't say for sure, but based upon the, you know, the channeled writings and books that we've read, supposedly, you know, channeled from, you know, spirit on the other side, was that they're busy. They are all those things. They're teaching and they're learning and they're helping, you know, and they're guiding. They're busy. You know, we think of the traditional, especially those that have a religious conviction and belief that taught that we're, you know, lying on a cloud playing a harp and just sitting around. That doesn't sound too exciting, is it? But I think it's far from that. Yeah. People talk of, right, you've read books, Tom and Wiss, I know about, they talk about actual halls of learning, right? and museums, you know, and so who creates them? You know, is it created as a community? Do we create it with our own consciousness? We've heard people say that they love their home when they were in the physical world, so they've recreated their home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's true. I know that, you know, we don't know. We can speculate. And I know we talk about that book, that Testimony of Light, where the woman who was coming through to the author talked about it's almost like a rebirth. It's like being born again and like a baby. Great periods of sleep, rest, and then awaken for a little bit and take in the surroundings and going back to sleep again. But then I believe in that book, I want to call it a story, and I don't think she considered it channeled necessarily, but being guided to write it, maybe that's the same thing. But you're working to help people on their journey, because we've often heard that in this physical life that we're living right now, we all may have flaws of some sort or behaviors or things that we might regret. And when we get to the other side, we have a chance to make up for those things a little bit and change our ways and turn bad situations into good situations for other people. And we also know from some of the readings we've been able to listen in on, sometimes a sitter, the person sitting with a medium, isn't happy with who came through. They didn't think that that person had treated them very well or wasn't a very nice person in the physical world. But on the other side, they've had a chance to see the error of their ways, and they're working on them. And so hopefully anyone if they find themselves in that situation, listen. If a medium brings through somebody you don't care to hear from, just listen.
Yeah. And we talk about, we mentioned the word guiding, you know, so, and that's something we've talked about. I mean, they're giving us inspiration through thought, right? I mean, Tom's a songwriter. He's written songs that, sorry, Tom, but didn't come from you. It came from,
no, absolutely.
You know, Marta's an artist, you know, she's painted things that I'm sure were inspired by those that were guiding her. You know, writers, the same thing. Mathematicians, you know, physicists, you know, so I think they do a pretty good job in, you know, in guiding. I mean, have you ever felt inspired, like it's not coming from you?
I've always felt that way.
Yeah, I know.
You know, my paintings, after I finished one, I think to myself, where did that come from? How did that happen? But to talk to Melissa's about how somebody maybe that you didn't like is coming through. My daughter's birth father was not a very good father, and but after he passed, this was my first husband. Something very good happened to her, and even though she had had a very difficult relationship with him, she said that was a gift from him to say, I'm better now. I understand all the things that I did to you that were mean and mean-spirited or not healthy. And that gave her so much comfort. And I believe that that happened because I think he did want forgiveness and it created so much happiness in her life to think that he would come through and do that for her, and because it was highly unusual and to have received this gift that she did, and very few people would have been given this, and so yeah, I believe that the people who have gone on the other side understand, you know, how they've hurt people and regret it, yeah, and somehow send it through.
I agree.
And the second part of that question, I never termed them, you know, angel numbers. Like, I guess I understand where that term comes from, but certainly so many people see the same numbers all the time. I mean, I know, you know, Tom's number is 11 and 11 and 11.
That's right.
And you, 33.
Ah.
But, you know, that was funny. I didn't know that her number that keeps coming up was 33. And I was out with my grandson at a restaurant. And the waitress brought us the bill. And then she said, wow, you know, you're this is your lucky day. And I said, why? She says, well, you're sitting at table number three and your bill came out to 33.33. So I didn't think much of it. But then when I told me that was her number, I thought, okay, maybe that's something.
But bing.
Yeah. So what do you make of these numbers that these synchronicities? I mean, what?
I was having this conversation this past week with a friend who hasn't explored any of this. And it's been such a part of my life forever that when I encounter friends who haven't given much thought to life after death or anything like that, it's so interesting. And I have trouble explaining things because I'm just so accustomed to associate with people who do talk about this all the time. It's like, where do you begin? And she was curious about the numbers. And I was explaining my number is 141. And if you haven't heard me say this, Marta, that was the time I was born, 141 a.m. And turns out my daughter was born at 141 a.m. Oh. Also. So it was when I saw that on the paperwork, it doesn't show up on birth certificates because I was looking that up recently and I didn't find it there. But I had mentioned this to Tom, and then he had all these 141 synchronicities as well. And recently, it wasn't that recently. I was just recently recalling this story to my friend, but there's a gal who is an author, and I had met her at a few writer workshops, and she and I share the same birthday. And when she gave birth to a daughter years later and was posting about it on Facebook, just happened to mention that her daughter was born at 1:41 a.m. And I messaged her a couple days later, giving her a little chance to recover from the birth, of course. And I said, was your daughter really born at 1:41? She goes, yes. Why? I go, well, I don't know. She goes, what does that mean? I go, I don't know what it means. Yeah. But you and I share the same birthday. And each of us have a daughter who was born at 1:41. So I don't know what it means. But someday we may all find out. And there we will be on the other side with our number 141. Step over here, 1111.
It's a way to connect. Another way to connect with spirit, because we are all connected. It's just in the physical world we don't feel it, and so we need things like signs and that to say, oh, there is something more than just our day to day physical life. And fortunately for me, 1111 is more than just a number. There are a lot of people who have a connection to 1111, and it's something that I didn't pick. You'd say, well, how do you know what your number is? It finds you. It was in the early 90s when I was working with music and that, and 1111 kept showing up on the counters. You know, in the old days with tape machines, you could have a tape machine that would have a real-time counter, so it would be 11 minutes, 11 seconds, and some of the machines, the counter was just a number that would go by, and those would show up as 1111, so much so that when I was finishing my first album, I told, I was trying to come up with a title for it, and I had some silly names that Melissa didn't really think were good enough, and I said, yeah, but I have to have a name. I'm going to press in 2 weeks. She goes, well, why don't you just call it 1111? That's all you've been talking about for the last year. So that got me started in noticing the 1111s, but then there were, I could go on for the rest of the hour on how many connections I've had because of it. And there have been many theories that I've, at least two or three major theories of what it actually means, what 1111 signifies. It's a big number in the cabal, if you know about Kabbalism. But I still don't know exactly why me, or what's the connection. But whenever it pops up, I get that feeling of, oh yes, I'm connected.
Yeah.
And so the numerology is a big science. If whoever asks the question is interested, you might read about Kabbal or just pick up a book on numerology and see if whatever number is shown to you has any significance.
I recall once I was a traveling teacher and driving to one of my students' houses, and I was probably to be there at 11. I was running a little bit late, and I was driving I had inherited Tom's dad's Cadillac, which had the time on the dashboard coming up like a digital clock, and it was 11:11. I go, okay, I know I'm running late, but I'm got to keep going, and the clock didn't change. It stayed at 11:11. And I didn't know what to think, so I actually pulled over and started calling the children. My daughter, who's at college, and my son, wherever he was located at the time, goes, anything going on? Because the car is saying 11:11. And I can't reach Dad on the phone. You must have been at work. And I just need to know, is everything okay? And, they assured me everything was fine. And I got to my student's house and apologized, of course, for being late. I didn't say why I was late. I just, but when I got back in the car later, it was fine.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, just stuck on 11:11.
Well, we also hear a lot of reports of people who happen to glance at the clock when their loved one passes, and the time has significance, whether it be 11:11 or 3:33, but it's kind of uncanny that number keeps coming up and then a loved one passes. I remember I never paid much attention, to numbers at all. But then again, I didn't pay attention to any of the stuff we're talking about now. But I remember, Dave Kane, and he's written books about this connection to the number 41. I always thought, they were interesting. And he was always telling me that there were so many synchronicities between his deceased son and my deceased daughter, he said, the 41 has to mean something that's going to connect them. And I was driving home. I had every day I would pass the site of the accident, where my daughter was killed. And I never realized that it was about 6 months later that, it was the site of a historic home.
Mm-hmm.
So there was an address on a little pole, outside. And I looked at the address and it was 41, so that was, that was a little strange. I got to admit that. And so those are the things, like Tom said, it becomes attached to something. Well, there's some connection there.
My daughter, Laura, her number is 11:11.
Is it?
Really?
Yeah. And she thinks it's an angel talking to her.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'll go with that.
Well, one of the theories, the one I liked the best, was that it was a Native American belief. The 11:11 was that they were signified that the ancestors were going to return to the earth and guide humanity towards a more utopian lifestyle. I'm holding close to that one. I want to believe that one, but I also believe I was talking about making a record that I eventually called 11:11. Well, since I've made that record, I've run into a couple of artists who also have albums called 11:11. Regina Spektor is one of them, but another one, this woman Roberta, and I was going to a songwriting thing that Livingston Taylor was holding, that a friend of mine was doing some songs at, and I've met this woman who talked about her 1111 album. So I came up to her afterwards and I said, 1111, I have an album, 1111. She goes, oh, you're a number spotter. And I said, well, what does that even mean? She says, well, the people who spot the 1111 are apparently, there's a spaceship coming, and the 1111 number spotters have got a spot on that spaceship. So I'm not so invested in that theory, but there are theories out there. I stick with the utopian.
Yeah, I always suspected you were a number spotter.
I sort of like the spaceship idea.
Yeah, I know. Good. Linda wanted to know, what are some of the top researchers and or universities doing consciousness research? I might add now, there are so many universities now that are doing consciousness research because they're studying the mind and they're trying to determine the nature of consciousness. We're also very interested in the study of survival of consciousness. There aren't all that many that are doing that, but you know, we have the, you know, division of perceptual studies at the University of Virginia. We have the Winbridge Institute. We have the Ryan Institute, University of Northampton in the UK, University of Arizona, the California Institute for Human Science, and many mainstream, you know, good universities are getting more into trying to determine the nature of consciousness. So there's plenty of material out there. We had a question. I've heard of mediums that have to touch the sitter to make a connection. Have you heard of that? Well, you know, that was synchronistic because we had an application from a medium recently for a medium certification. And when we asked some questions, one of the things that she wrote is that's how she connects. She has to touch the person, which wouldn't equate or go well with doing Zoom readings.
Yeah.
You know, but I can see I'm open to the suggestion that physical contact somehow crystallizes or brings a connection, you know, into, you know, sort of collapses the wave, you know, and people start to so, but I know none of our mediums ever, you know, touch anybody, although we also hear of mediums and mostly psychics that ask you to bring something of your loved one, and like a ring or a scarf or something, and they touch it and they claim that, you know, facilitates that connection. But obviously a good evidential medium doesn't need to do that. You know, they're communicating mind to mind, thought to thought. So, but I mean, you haven't heard any mediums that have asked to touch the sitter.
Yeah, holding an object, I think the term is telemetry, that you, if you have something physical in your hand, that can facilitate a reading. I mean, a lot of mediums start off using tarot cards to get them started and then eventually move on from them. So maybe the telemetry or a touching is something that this particular medium did early on and never varied from that. So it's not necessary. If it helps, if they get a fantastic reading from having someone touch them, then that's fine. But it's not necessary for most mediums.
That's exactly what I was going to say, Tom. The same thing, that as they develop their abilities, they might have had those, I don't want to call them tricks, their little necessary ritual, perhaps. And we know from some of our mediums who do development work with other mediums, they encourage them, you know, you don't need the tarot cards anymore. You don't need the touch, and it's just sort of become a habit for them. Maybe it's like those sports guys who always make the same moves before they pitch or twist their hat a certain way. Maybe it's something along those lines.
Yeah,
gives them confidence. This is the gathering. If you had a question or you'd like to share something, the number here is 888-627-6008. So Marta and I were having a conversation before the show because, you know, she noticed that I often use the term somebody's passing as opposed to saying somebody's, you know, dying or died. And I agree that we tend to use passing as it's somehow less final, you know, like death is final and passing, but neither one of them are really the way we think. It's not a passing as much as it's a moving to a new realm. But saying that a lot of people, don't you find that even at the grief retreats, people don't say that their loved one most often died, you know, that they'll say that they passed.
I think it's a more euphemistic term that the dying, as you mentioned there, is so final. You know, you figure, well, death is it. It's done, you know, and there's certainly millions of people on this planet who think that's right. You live and then you die and that is it. And so to say they died brings that connotation with it. And the last thing we want to do is, especially in a grief retreat, is say, no, it's not the end. So passing is more of an active verb, that it's still happening. It hasn't ended. It's just passed over into another phase of your existence.
But you always prefer to say died, right?
I did because I didn't want to make it maybe what I thought of as sweet, you know, that death. Yes, that person died, and you know, and so the despair and the grief and all of the things that go along with that you know, that when someone is gone out of your life, you know, I didn't want to soften it. But I realize, you know, after having gone through, you know, all the different stages of grief, that it's not only passing, which is softer, but it's transitioning. I think of it as a transition from one realm into another. And but it took me time to understand that and to feel it and to think of it as not so final. Thich Nhat Hanh talks about his mother as being in another room, that she's simply transitioned into another room. And I like that idea that the people I love, I can reach out and find them in another room. But it's that's that movement, that transitioning.
Yeah. And I often wanted to use the term transition because I think that's a good word that describes it. But if I'm talking to somebody that either never heard of the stuff we're talking about or doesn't believe in life after death, and they said, oh yeah, my daughter transitioned, you know, he or she would be saying, well, what does that mean? Where did they go? Had a new job, they moved, you know, I mean, so that doesn't quite, you know, fit the bill. Also, on that subject of death being so final, we all noticed that there are some people who, mostly the people who don't believe in life after death, I noticed early on that they became angry at the suggestion that their loved one still exists in some form, you know, because by saying that they still exist in their mind, that diminishes the depth of their grief, you know, and they've become defined by their grief. That becomes who they are. So like, there was like, how dare you say that my my son, you know, still exists. My son is dead, you know, and that's, and so I get it, you know, I totally get that. But hopefully one of the things that we are able to help people with is opening up the possibility that they still do exist, you know, in a very, very real sense.
And I liked what Marta said earlier about not wanting to soften it, because, yeah. You know, when someone dies or passes over or whatever, it is an extremely difficult, painful experience. And our one of our great facilitators, Dr. Mohanna, says you need to actually embrace the pain. That the expression is, you got to feel it until you don't feel it anymore. So yeah, you should cry and you should be in pain and all of that, and you embrace that when you feel it, and then hopefully the next time it won't hurt so much, and you keep doing that until the pain subsides. The grief better subside, because you grieve because you love. And you're not going to stop loving this person. So you're always going to have in the back of your head that grief. But what we are about is, yes, you're going to have grief and you're going to live with it, but it doesn't have to hurt so bad.
Thomas Merton talks about grief as being the beginnings of grief, you know, where you want to blame the universe, and he would say God. And that those feelings are thorns that are just in, you know, embedded in your heart and in your soul and in your whole being. But that after a while, you'll find that you'll smile about a memory, about a loved one. And, you know, after a while, it does soften. It becomes like a cloud. You know, you see pass by and you see like a dove or you know, a dog or something, and you feel that being a part of that whole experience, and that death or passing or transitioning is like the cloud. It becomes soft after a while. It moves. It's gentle.
I like that. That's a good way to explain it.
Okay, let's take a call. We have Hal from Maine with us. Hello, Hal.
Hi, how are you guys?
All right, how are you?
I think it's our pal, Hal. Is it?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes, and we're looking forward to seeing you next month.
Wonderful.
Oh, great.
So I have a question my wife, you know, really, really believes, I'm really believed. But one of the things that I'm always perplexed is that a medium takes a lot of time to show evidence that they're making a connection, might use our son's name or describe him and stuff. Even have had mediums that have said, oh, he's been with me for days. He won't leave me alone. You know, even one said, you know, I was on a date and he was kept bothering me, you know, but yet if we ask a question, a lot of times they say, do you have a question? And first of all, we don't know whether that means a question of the medium or a question for our son who has passed. But it's hard to get the communication through the medium to answer things, you know, like I know once in a blue moon, somebody can ask them for a combination of to get on their phone because they can't get on it or whatever. Can you explain how they can make the connection and kind of really prove to us that they've been in touch with our deceased, but can't really like have a, or that we can see, have like a human conversation?
Yeah. Well, I can take a crack at that. If you know, we believe that The number one priority of somebody that has crossed over is to give you specific evidence so that you realize that they still exist. And that has to be very specific. I mean, by telling you that they're okay and that they love you, that's not going to cut it for most people. For some, it will. It never did for me. But the communication process, I think, is not easy because the medium is getting information, usually with a thought transmission, and then they have to put it into human language and interpret what's being said, and that's difficult. So we never get these long statements. They usually tend to be, short answers, but the better mediums will leave you without having any doubt because they will say extremely specific things that only you would ever know, things that you never maybe even told anybody else in your family. So when we evaluate the proficiency of mediums, we do not score messages. We discount them, even though they may be true, because there's no way of, if I say that, your son in spirit is proud of you, well, I'm sure that he is, but how do we validate that? We're not speaking to him. So the messages are one thing, and they could be truly healing, but it's only the really specific evidence that comes through that can get you to the point of removing all doubt that communication is taking place. And that's why we also don't get these long statements about what the afterlife is like. I mean, it's hard enough for the medium to get a name by interpreting, the thoughts that they're getting, let alone, a big long description of what they're saying. I wish they could, and some of them can, that can channel where the medium takes over their body and they do this automatic writing, and there have been books written. I know Tom and Melissa have read some of these channel books, and there you get that. But I don't know if that makes any sense to you, Hal, but that's my thought about it.
Yeah, it does, and that's what we've seen. I mean, I did get a reading at one of your events where, somebody said, your father, I didn't ask a question, just said, by the way, your father is here as well. And he says, I know I didn't tell you this, but, I was proud of you and I love you, things that he never said to me in life. So that probably jumped my belief a huge amount, right? But I think that, as you were just saying, that's something that they got.
Oh, did Hal cut out?
Put it in another quarter.
Hal didn't have enough quarters. Oh.
I think the rate went up on those.
Just now.
Maybe Hal can still hear us though, and I'm glad you shared that, Hal, and I'm certainly looking forward to seeing you coming up in the spring. Oh, he's calling back. Let's hope so.
All right, we'll wait for Hal. But I think, he raises a good question when he says, I mean, in how many readings have we heard, that they're okay and they're sharing their love? And not to say that's not true. It's probably true in 99% of the time. But we're looking to be convinced, that they really have them. Hal, you back with us?
Yeah, I found some quarters.
Yeah, that Tom, he's such a wise ass. I don't
So, anyway, no, I think you kind of answered it. It'll make me, look at it a little different, that it is, like you said, really hard to have a direct conversation. I know a lot of people would love to have it, but I feel better that you're kind of explaining that, how tough that would really be. And in the other respect, I don't know how our child or our lost one, or past one, you know, whether they said it or not, right? It could be that they're hearing it from somebody else, because we often hear that mediums, you know, say, okay, we're done, Hal, there's somebody else here. Mm-hmm. Next to your son or something like that, who wants to talk to somebody else. But no, I appreciate it, and thanks for what you guys do. I really appreciate it.
Hal, I'm curious, have you only experienced readings through the retreats you've attended, or have you met with mediums privately?
We've met with people privately. Most of them are part of your group. Mm-hmm. And of your team, I should say. And we have found that Karen, my wife, and I can't really go together, because my personality seems to draw more from the medium.
Ah.
And so we now split up. And that way sometimes my father will come through or something, or Karen's hoping that, you know, maybe somebody from her side will come.
I hope you record your readings.
Oh, Tom's asking if you record these readings, do you?
I think so. Yeah, I think Karen does hers, and I think she makes me do hers. So, yeah, I think we do, so the other person can hear it.
It is a good, yeah, exactly. The other person can hear it, but also I have noticed, and, you know, I've been with the foundation for 20 years, but when I personally get a reading, and I'm sure most people do, especially ones who have never had a reading before, when all of a sudden the spotlight's on you, and I've got spirit here, and they're looking me in the eye, and you're going, hamana, 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 and somebody comes through that you don't think, expecting, and all sorts of things happen in a reading, and then the reading's done, and you go, well, and somebody says, well, how was your reading? You know, what did they say? And you're going, well, I don't know. But if you have it recorded, mm-hmm. you and listen back to it when you're, you know, in a calm and comfortable place, you will find that things come through that make more sense a day or two later than they did on the spot. So I definitely recommend recording your session. It's also a good indication of the quality of the medium. If they're skittish about being recorded, that's a red flag, in my opinion.
Definitely.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. And I will say, and it's something that we will do in you know, for others, is at your retreat, the last time we were there, somebody recorded one of our readings as the medium was talking, because who would think that, you know, to think to turn your phone on and everything while you're saying, oh yeah, that's me, that's my person, right? And that was such a great thing that somebody had just done in the audience. And we'll do that for others, or maybe just as a suggestion, sometimes when they're doing that, maybe you guys could record and just give it to that person, you know, and then delete it or whatever. But it really did help when we were actually there, because you are kind of, like you said, on the spotlight, and you're going like, I hope I remember this. And all of a sudden some nice person says, by the way, I recorded this here. I'll send you the voice message, you know.
And there's some other, you know, advantages of the recording, especially if you get a really good reading and you start questioning yourself, as we all do, you know, is it real? Is it not? Am I imagining it? And then you play back the reading and you hear all this evidence, and it kind of gets you back on the right track. You know, I've also listened to a recording, you know, where the sitter said, well, you know, the medium was not very good. I said, well, let's listen to it. And said, well, you know, she didn't get my husband at all. And then I listened to the recording, and the very first thing, you know, that the medium said is like, you know, I have your husband Irving here. And I said, are you kidding me? He gave you the exact name, you know, Irving, which is not a Joe or a Bob, you know, it's like, and in her mind, she never heard it. So sometimes, you know, I've also heard the opposite, you know, where the medium said, you know, the sitter said that the medium gave a piece of evidence and the medium never did, you know, because, you know, people in grief grasp at, you know, at things, and they want to hear. But it works both ways. But it is very valuable, as Tom pointed out. And I think the greatest reason is so you can refer back to it and reinforce your.
Yeah. And you know how it is when you're in the, especially at the retreat, when you've got this room full of energy and the medium is giving you this great reading, you get such a warm feeling. And then you go home, and the next week you're back at work at the office, and you're thinking, was that really real? You know, so having the tape or the recording to listen to again will bring back that feeling. And, you know, I mentioned tape because we have, you know, one of our early mediums, who's now famous, the Long Island medium. I took my mom to a reading, and she always had a little cassette deck there, and she would put a tape in, and she would tape it, and then give you the tape at the end of the reading. And this one particular reading with my mom, it was an hour long reading, and then 45 minutes in, she goes, "Oh, my father had come through, and which was my mom's husband, and said, and he said he's going to mess with the tape." And I thought that was interesting. So she gave me the tape, and I went home, and usually what I would do, because at that time cassettes were on their way out anyway, so I would take the cassette tape and I would digitize it and give a CD to my mom to listen to in the car. And as I'm listening back to the tape, right at that spot, and she goes, "Oh, and he said he's going to mess with the tape." And it went like that. And I went, "Okay, yeah, I guess he did." So, yeah, there's a lot to be gained from having recordings of these.
Well, thanks for calling in, Hal.
You got it.
I'd love to, Karen. Yes, great to see you.
Okay.
Yep.
Another question here.
Keep listening on the other.
Oh, good.
One of our listeners asked, if it's true that our loved ones in spirit escort us to the other side, what happens then? Do they stay with us or do they move on? Well,
I don't think we know that, but I do believe that they will be there for us. Someone will be there for us.
Well, we do know that you're going to be greeted by a loved one.
Yes.
We don't know, what happens right afterwards, but as an earlier caller said, you know, on the other side, they're teaching, learning, and guiding. So you will get guidance. And the book you mentioned, Testimony of Light, this particular woman who had passed over, she had been a nun. And when she got to the other side, she was there to help people who needed advancement of their souls. I remember one chapter of the book was somebody who was basically evil person on this planet, and they needed a little help before they could acclimate to the afterlife.
Yeah, and also as we've talked about a lot, assuming that there's progression, constant progression on the other side, with corresponding frequency and vibration, it's difficult, for lack of a better term, to move down levels. So they're there to greet you because they're always part of you. They're part of your life and they love you. But they may not, it's like going, how long can you stay underwater? You know, it's very difficult. So you got to, they go back to where they, where they were. But, as Tom said, the evidence seems to point to that they're there no matter what, right?
That's a good analogy about the underwater. And I don't know the story now, and I know we're running out of time, but we'll have to revisit. If you recall back in 2006, we heard that story about the dragonfly. Do you recall that, Bob? And the dragonflies had, passing on and promised to come back and tell the others what it was like. But once they emerged from the water, their wings had formed, and they couldn't go back into the water to go back and tell the others behind.
Yeah.
Behind.
I like that.
And there was a movie, Dragonfly.
Yes.
That's right. That was with a mark, a tattoo or a birthmark or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of connections. And 1111, people connect with the dragonfly because the wings on each side.
Oh, yeah, the dragonfly has an 11-11 to it.
Yeah.
11-11.
That's right. Well, some of these other questions are going to take us way too long. I mean, one question, if we can answer it in a minute, are our lives eternal?
Yes.
And I assume by our lives, they mean not only the physical life, but the non-physical life. So,
our souls are eternal, yes.
Yeah.
Do you think there's a point where we stop? We've reached the pinnacle, we become enlightened, and there's no more need to go further? I mean, that's kind of the way I
think. It seems that way, that you're heading towards what they would call nirvana in the Hindu religion. But
yeah, well, I got about an inch to go.
Fingers.
I'm about 1/16 enlightened. So. All right, our global peace prayer. Let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment.
And I'd like to remind everyone that our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to accept it.
And thanks, everybody. And thanks, Tom and Melissa and Martha.
Thank
and
you.
We'll see you all on the next show. Have a good evening.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.